there and welcome to episode 161. That's episode 161 of the Childless Not by Choice podcast. My name is Savilla Morgan. My mission is to recognize and speak to childless not by choice women and men around the world, reminding you, reminding us that we can live joyful, relevant, fulfilled, childless not by choice lives. And whether you have children or not, thank you for tuning in. What is today's show about? IVF. That's right, in vitro fertilization. But before we get started, I want to take just a quick moment to thank my Patreon contributors. Those are the people who give to the platform on a monthly basis. Thank you so very much. Be sure, if you have not already, Patreon patrons, to go to the Patreon site and check out my video message. And I think I also did a written message to you. So please go into the site and check it out. I've basically asked you back there if you are interested in getting a copy of Praying Through Infertility. I have a free copy for you because you give to the platform. I've already given some away to some people. So if you are interested and you are a patron, please let me know. You can answer back there in the Patreon site, or you can just email me at Savilla@SavillaMorgan.com with the best address to send it to. I want to try to keep it within the U.S. If you are a patron outside of the U.S., still let me know. We can work something out because Amazon store, of course, I think many of us know this. This was pretty cool when I found this out a few years ago. You can go into the Amazon store for a particular country and have something shipped through that country's Amazon store so that you don't pay a ton of money in shipping. So if you are a patron, but you live outside of the U.S., still contact me and I'll see what I can do to work something out for you, okay? So thank you to my patrons. Your contributions help pay for everything that's going on. It makes me have to take less out of my pocket to pay for the things in the background on the platform. Thank you very much. Thank you to those who send money every once in a while via PayPal, which you can go to booksbysavillamorgan@gmail.com on PayPal if you'd like to make a once in a while contribution. Thank you all very much. So here goes. IVF. Based on my research, and all the links to my research are in the show notes. Many of you know, if you've checked out any of the show notes for the episodes, they're always chock full of information, links to research, and links to articles that I find interesting, sometimes even intriguing. So be sure to check out the links because I want to always cite where I got my information from. And even if I don't cite it verbally during the episode, it's in the show notes. So I'm not trying to take anything, any information from anybody. The information, the citations, the links, they're all in the show notes. Having said that, did you know? On average, IVF has a success rate of 46.7% depending on individual fertility conditions. That's from cryosinternational.com. So that link is in the show notes. Also, this is from another source. 1 million, that's the number of babies born in the United States between 1987 and 2015 through the use of IVF or other assisted reproductive technologies. Technology is the key word for what we're going to talk about today. According to a report released in 2017 by the U.S. Society of Assisted Reproductive Technology, that's SART, link is in the show notes. Assisted reproductive technologies include IVF or the use of an egg donor, sperm donor, or adopted embryo. Also, today, 40 years after its heavily criticized clinical introduction, IVF is available as a successful treatment for infertility almost all over the world. Over 8 million IVF children have been born, and over 2.5 million cycles are being performed every year, resulting in over 500,000 deliveries annually. That's from Google. So what is IVF? How's it done? During in vitro fertilization, mature eggs are collected from the ovaries and fertilized by sperm in a lab. Then a procedure is done to place one or more of the fertilized eggs, called embryos, into a uterus, which is where babies develop. One full cycle of IVF takes about 2 to 3 weeks. 2 to 3 weeks, just for one full cycle. How much does it cost? How much does IVF cost? According to my research, while the average base cost of a single IVF cycle falls between $14,000 and $20,000, that's merely an approximation. It can differ, I guess, moreover, additional costs can make it differ. It can differ based on where in the world you are. It can differ based on storage fees. And of course, you know, the doctor fees. So it can be different. I've always heard the $20,000 figure. So, you know, they say between $14,000 and $20,000, but $20,000 has always been in my mind. That's what I'm used to hearing. So just getting the pre-work done costs thousands of dollars, and the whole process is about timing. On top of all the money you have to come up with, because some companies, they do have assistance. So definitely if it's something that you're looking into, check with your employer, with your benefits team to see if you can get any help. But my understanding is some companies do offer that as part of the benefits package. So timing, ovulation, injections into the stomach at just the right time of the month, all the things that need to be done at just the right time. And let's not forget what we call cultivation of the eggs. It's all a process, all of it. And this process is done by doctors, people who studied for a very long time so that they could assist their patients with this procedure. Politicians and judges went to school to study politics and law. Doctors went to school to study their doctor stuff, the things that they need to know to do things, whether it's dealing with IVF or anything else, whatever else they're doing. So nowhere do the two professions meet unless a person gets both degrees. And I checked to see if this judge in Alabama has an MD, JD degree, in other words, a medical and law degree, and I didn't find anything in my research that says he does. Speaking of Alabama, what's the backstory anyway? Some of you may already know the story, but I'm going to catch all of us up to speed here. So apparently, a patient went wandering around an IVF clinic that she was a patient at and somehow got back to where the embryos were kept in a cryogenic state, and dropped a few of them, destroying them. A few couples that also were clients of the clinic heard about this, and they sued. I have questions. How did this patient get back there? Why did she touch things that did not belong to her? Why did she touch them? I mean, I'm not trying to be judgmental. I don't know her side of the story. It'll probably eventually come out. Who knows? Was she looking for her embryos? Was the clinic not working with her according to what she needed? Why was she back there? But those questions aside, what I really want to know is how much research and homework was done by the judge to come to his ruling? Did he consider how ruling against IVF, the IVF procedure, would affect people who were having trouble getting pregnant? Was research done on the process of IVF, why it's done, how it's done even? I really don't know. Maybe he did and still decided to rule the way he did. Did he know that his ruling would affect men as well as women? Good question, right? Yeah. So when these lawmakers are making these laws, how much research is done? Seriously, I don't mean just legal research. I don't mean just sitting in a law library or having your law clerks sit in a law library trying to come up with legal reasons to cause terror in people's lives. How much research did they do to understand the relevance of the law to our current life in the 21st century? Does relevance to current life, say versus before IVF was invented, matter in research and rulings? I am no lawyer, but shouldn't the law have somehow keep up with the current times? And no, keeping up with the current times does not mean fundamentally changing the law. I'm not talking about fundamental changes. There are people who would like to do that, but we won't go there today. I'm not talking about fundamentally changing the law. Otherwise, as much as the law sometimes does not make any sense, imagine if we started messing around with it fundamentally to keep up with the fact that we are in the 21st century and not in the Middle Ages. There's still balance required. And a great deal of that balance means not changing the fundamentals of things that can affect all of us. So that's not what I'm saying. Let me go deeper. Do these lawmakers know or even care about infertility, the biological clock, and gasp, the male infertility? Are these lawmakers just concerned about their interpretation of the law and making a name for themselves down through history, using God as a way to make it make sense? Now, let me stop here for just a second. That noise you hear is me getting my soapbox. Number one, God is not the author of confusion. Number two, God has given us free will as human beings. He's given us free will. He's not coming down every time we're doing something to say, I don't think that's a good idea. He's given us his information. It's in the book, and he's given us free will. I'm not saying he's not involved. He is, because we pray and he hears our prayers, but he's given us free will, okay? He has given us wisdom, common sense, and the ability to invent things like IVF. There are some really smart people on this planet. Look at the fact that we can go to the moon now, and we are looking at sending humans to Mars and wherever else they want to go. There are some really smart people on the planet. What are we supposed to do with that intelligence? So he's given us wisdom, common sense, and the ability to invent things like IVF. And by the way, he created every human being in his image. So he loves women as well as men. He created us women. And he created men. He doesn't see us as any different. Any differences aside from how he wants us to live with each other according to his word? And I don't want to get too deep into that because I know not everybody listening is a believer, and that's not why we're here today. But the bottom line is, he doesn't love us as women any less than he loves men. We are all created in his image. All of the division that we see globally, the mistreatment and hatred of women, it's not God, and it's not godly. Okay. That's me hopping off my soapbox. It's been a while since I've used my soapbox, so thank you for allowing me the latitude. Look, I realize the law is not based on empathy, and one can argue that point, but if the law were based on empathy, some perpetrators would not be released on a technicality, and some people would not rot in a prison for something they did not do, because with empathy comes more work, more research. And that would help in both types of cases that I just mentioned. People, men and women, would not have to suffer through infertility, deal with IVF treatments, results of other things that are done, typically usually to women, and then rely on a legal system that has no empathy, has done no research, and has no real world answers or understanding on the matter to which it has to be ruled, while not fundamentally changing the laws. I believe both can be done. The bottom line is this. The patriarchy is acting as it has for a millennia, but the part that gets me is when God is brought in. Let me repeat what I said earlier. God does not hate women. He created us all in his image, men and women. He does not prefer men over women. He does not have disdain for women. That's a human thing. So I don't understand how the rampant mistreatment of women worldwide makes the world a better place, because it doesn't. And I don't think that putting God in the mix is the right thing to do. Anyway, I don't want to get back on my soapbox again. What happened in Alabama and what is happening around the country is not being done in kindness and empathy. It's being done to grab power, to be judgmental, and to cause duress. And for what reason? Power. But God has the ultimate power. I know the Alabama Supreme Court cobbled something together to help protect those who are going through the IVF process from the judge's ruling, and the governor of Alabama has signed off on the ruling, but my understanding is that this new ruling still does not fully protect people going through IVF. It's a start, and I guess it will protect those who especially are in the middle of the process so that they don't end up going to jail, or their doctors don't go to jail, or the clinics are closed down. So that, I guess that part is working, but the issue is still not fully fixed. And please note that I'm not trying to be hateful towards this judge. I don't know who he is. I don't know what his thought processes were. I don't know how much research he did. I'm just going based on the results. That's all I'm speaking on today, is the results of his ruling. So, you know, hopefully in the meantime, or after all of this, he's doing research, he's done some research, and maybe God can talk to him about his thought process. But in the meantime, I would say that because this is not fully fixed or corrected, this ruling, that I guess we'll just have to stay tuned. That's all I can say. And I wish all of you who are going through the IVF process, no matter where in the world you are, I wish you the best. I hope you don't have to deal with anything so terrorizing while you're going through the process. The process is enough without having to worry about legal rulings. It's just unbelievable to me. But anyway, there are research links, as I said, in the show notes. So the Cryos International link is there. There's a link from penmedicine.org with some more statistics in there. I think that's the one with the statistics. Then there are a couple articles. I found an article from Al Jazeera where they talked about the Alabama Supreme Court ruling. I mean, the whole world apparently has their eyes on this. So Al Jazeera, that article is there if you want to read it. I also put an article in there about a woman from, oh my gosh, what country? It's a country in Africa. She had to flee for her life because after a couple of years of being married and not producing any children, her husband started abusing her because, you know, this is episode 161. I've been doing this for going on 9 years, and we're still talking about people who have not caught on to the fact that it may not be her, it may be him, but there are parts of this world where it's still not believed that it could be the man. Even when people have an inkling that it might be, if she leaves and goes and marries somebody else and has children, it may be him. But no, they don't want to believe that. So anyway, I'm just going to continue to try to get the word out. And I just hope that, I know childlessness, I know it's tough, especially depending on where in the journey one is. But if you can at all reshare the episodes to friends and family on your social media feeds, I would really appreciate it. We have got to get the word out. And I guess apparently there's only so much I can do. But I really want to get the word out. I wish there was a way, to be honest. There are certain countries, and I'm not going to mention them, where I can get the information out so that I can maybe, you know, speak to people and have them listen and do their own research then, if they don't believe what I'm saying. Do your own research to see that sometimes it's the woman, sometimes it's the man. And so I just really want to ask you to please try to reshare the episodes when you can. I know there may be some episodes you don't want to for whatever reason. Even listening to this episode may be tough on some people because it's dealing with something that you've probably dealt with before, IVF, or you're in the midst of now. But I hope that this episode has shed some light on what happened in Alabama and on, you know, what the statistics are on how helpful IVF is. I know it's not always successful. They already said 47.5%. That's less than half. So it's not always successful, but that's a lot of children being born still. So I, again, wish you all the best if you're going through the process, thinking about the process. If you are a believer who prays, let's pray about what's going on in Alabama and around our country and around our world. I'm recording this in the month of March, which is International Women's Month. I know that Women's Day was March 8th, but I think we're catching on to celebrating all month now. So happy International Women's Month. I wish you the best wherever you are. If you are in conflict areas, I'm praying for you. You know, places like Congo and Gaza and Israel, where some of those people are still being held hostage. Ukraine. It's always the women and children who get hit the hardest. And I'm so sorry if you're in a conflict area that you have to deal with this, but you are definitely in my thoughts and prayers. I just hope that these conflicts are over quickly as possible. That's my morning prayer every morning, because it's just terrible, because we catch it the most. We do. So, okay, I'm ending now. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. And of course, if you ever want to reach out, Sevilla@SevillaMorgan.com. All of my contact information is in the show notes near the bottom of the show notes. I'm on Pinterest, LinkedIn, Instagram, @JoyAndRelevance, Twitter. I'm there, but I don't hang out there a whole lot right now. Okay, I'm going to leave that alone. Of course, Facebook. So just about anywhere, just message me, give me 24 to 48 hours to respond, and I will do so. And I thank you for listening. Have a great one. Bye.